Yes, it's the time of the week where we get behind the wheel, we put on the leather driving gloves, and we move into first gear and head off down the highway. Do people, James Ward, content director for drive.com.au, do people still wear leather driving gloves?
Do you know what?
Do you remember that?
I have a couple of pairs of my own, I think.
No, you wanker. Yeah.
No. And you know the worst thing is you put them on and they're slippery and they feel really weird on the wheel and you're better off not wearing them at all. But I do have a really nice pair that I'd love to know. Oh, I just need the right car for them, I think. That's the thing.
MG. Yeah. All right.
It needs to be something very old.
A Triumph Stag, which... something like, do you remember the old cartoon Hot Wheels?
No.
Well, there was a cartoon Hot Wheels. It was basically a cartoon about the Mattel Hot Wheels. And they wore leather driving gloves in this cartoon, and I always thought that's really cool. And then somebody once told me, don't ever wear them. They hamper your driving immensely. Only wankers wear them.
That's it. They are, and they slip on the wheel, and it feels a bit.
Nah.
A bit weird, and so that's it. They're there. They're sitting in a drawer somewhere, yet to find the perfect occasion.
Now, James, you had on drive.com.au not so long ago a really, really good article, and it was the 14 things you must do when taking a car for a test drive. So I thought I'd get you to take us through, maybe not all 14, but maybe the 5 really important tips. When you're finally taking a car for a test drive, what are the main things you've got to look out for?
Oh, look, and this is the thing. It's taking a bit of care to go through it. So one of the big ones, and this is for non-new cars. So if it's a second-hand car where you're not 100% sure of what the history is, the first thing is to check the books. And it's a great way of understanding that car has been regularly serviced. You can see if it's been matching the right intervals. It's been looked after the way that it needs to. You can check that it matches the odometer. It's just a really nice little piece of paperwork. And again, if you ask the question to see the books and they say no, that's a red flag. So checking the books and making sure that service history is up to date is a really, really good one. The idea that you turn a car on cold, so you look at it first thing, so it hasn't had a chance to warm up. I know when I'm selling one, you want to warm it up because they always start better and sound a bit smoother when they're worn. So if you are able to try it when it's cold, it's a great way to understand if there are any mechanical kind of, you know, off-sounding clicks and clacks and taps and all sorts of things like that. One of the big things, though, is that I say, because people are buying cars for different reasons, bring your reasons with you. And if you've got two car seats and you need to buy a car they're going to fit in, bring them down. If you've got something that needs to go in the boot, or if you've got people that need to ride in the car, bring them to have a look as well, because there'd be nothing worse than you think everything's all right. You get home, you can't fit your stuff in it. It doesn't fit grandma in the back. Whatever it is that you need to be using your car for, do try to experiment with your life when you're there in the dealer.
You know, I made a massive, massive mistake some years ago. The Minister for War and Finance was being particularly good to me at one point. So I bought her a car, and I bought her a Saab convertible turbo.
Excellent.
Yes, because she once said to me, I've never had a convertible car before. So I got this thing, and it was magnificent, absolutely magnificent. And at that point, she and her sister-in-law, both of them being golfers, used to go away for golfing weekends. Mate, it was a ridiculous thing, because when the roof was down, the roof
couldn't fit the golf clubs.
Takes up most of the boot.
Yeah, that's it.
So they couldn't fit their golf clubs and their luggage in. And then she discovered that the only time she could have the roof back was on a mild spring day, not a cold winter's day and not a hot summer's day. So it was a waste of time. Anyway, there you are.
No, but that's it. Like, you've got to try and work with your life to make sure it's going to be right for you. The other thing that I would always suggest to do, and this sounds really weird, but do a 3-point turn. You need to, you see people go out of the dealer and drive around the block and pull back in and go, yeah, that's fine. But you need to do a 3-point turn. You need to understand, how does the car go from slow speed forward into reverse? Mm. If you can do it on a hill, that's even better, because you've got some of these the multi-clutch transmissions that can feel really elastic on a hill, and that can really show up if they're going to be problematic to drive. But the final thing I would always suggest is to drive on a number of different things. So it might take you a little bit longer, but if you're going for a test drive, go slow, do sort of, you know, some cruising at sort of 60 or so. But if you can, just pop onto the freeway, accelerate up. Doesn't mean thrash the thing, but just experiment through the different speeds that you're going to drive the car at and sort of get a feel for it. Is it going to wobble? Is it too noisy? Does it not do slow as well as it does fast? Does it not do fast as well as it does slow?
Yeah.
They're my kind of, you know, top tips. But Susanna's put together a big list of those articles, all those points there. And I think, yeah, as you say, there's 14 key things to watch. But we're always open to ideas. If somebody has their number one tip for things to do if you're going to a car dealer and what to do before you do, let us know, because we could add it up to 15 or more if we get some new good ones.
What about asking the dealership or the person you're buying it from, if it's private, I mean, getting it out on the freeway and getting it up to 110 kilometres an hour? Not everyone has access to a freeway, but if you do, can you ask?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And look, normally, if I'm selling a car, I'll insist on going with the person. So expect that you'll have either a salesperson or the person selling the car to come with you. Be respectful. Don't thrash the car, because you learn nothing out of you know, the sharp acceleration and things. Build it up to a cruising speed. Get used to, you know, does it wobble? Does it rattle? Does it vibrate? Does it make too much noise? Is it, you know, blowing smoke? Are the temperature gauges and things like that all okay? And if you're dealing with a new car and it's got warranty, then, you know, you're pretty safe. But if you're buying an older car and you're not really sure, do make sure you take it for a reasonable drive or arrange a detailed pre-purchase inspection.
Okay. Now, I've got a question for you without notice.
Okay, a surprise.
Okay, because I have mentioned it on air this week, but you weren't listening. So I had reason to pull into a very, very busy service station on the way to my daughter's wedding a couple of weeks ago. And it was massively busy. And we were driving Nikki's car, and the petrol flap, where you put the petrol in, is only on the, it's on the right-hand side. And every Bowser on that side was full. It was really annoying. And I thought to myself, why can't car manufacturers have a petrol flap on both sides? Is there an engineering reason why you can't fill up the car on either side?
Well,
is that
yes
a good question?
No.
Is that a good question?
It is a really good question. And if you remember, a Valiant Charger used to have its petrol filler in the middle. It was behind the number plate on the back.
That's right.
And I think Mark II Escorts had it there and things like that as well. But the reality is it's space. So where you're putting in the petrol pump and where you've got that hose going down into the tank, for the most part, that's sort of, you know, taken up with a bit of space. And on the other side, if they do that, well, then they've got to, you know, you've got to add more cost. You've got to put another filler. You've got to put another valve. You've got to put another pipe and things. That takes up space, or it adds more cost to do it. But what is interesting is as we move into, you know, the new generation of electric driving, if you have a look at a Porsche Taycan, the Porsche electric sedan, it has a charge flap on the front fender on both sides.
There you are.
So you can fill it on the left or the right. So it is one of those things. I think the way the Charger did it, hidden behind the fuel flap, was always a good one. But they are looking at how they can make things a little bit easier.
Come on. Look, it's probably too late. Everyone's thinking electric now. But why couldn't they make it so that you could fill your bloody car up on either side so you could pull into either pump? Either that, or why don't the service stations make the pump longer?
Yeah, the hose needs to be
longer. Make the hose longer.
Here's the thing I think they should do with electric cars. Like, as it is, right, you from the charger, you've got the cable comes from the charger to the car, or you've got to bring your own cable. But why don't they, remember the old Electrolux vacuum cleaners that had the retractable cord in them?
Yes.
You could extend and then pull, you know, then hit the little thing and it'll whisk it back in. Mm. Why don't electric cars have that? The extendable Electrolux style cord. So you can have a really long cord plugging in your thing.
Like the Aussie hoses. Come on, use one of my clients, please. Aussie hoses. They have the retractable hose.
This is it. The reel on the back. This is what, you know.
Thank you.
We need sensible things.
James, you've been great. Thank you, mate. Talk next week.
Talk soon.
James Ward, drive.com.au.